This podcast of NPR's On Point with Tom Ashbrook is a production of WBUR Boston.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. At the end of the day yesterday, having heard Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez spend hours justifying President Bush's program of domestic eavesdropping without court warrant, the Republican chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee, Arlen Specter, put it this way. The Bush administration's interpretation of law, said the senator, quote, just defies logic and plain English. And no fair reading of what Congress has done since 9/11, he said, could justify the wiretapping. And there it is, a president accused of subverting the fundamental checks and balances of the U.S. Constitution. Up next on Point, we'll ask what, if anything, will this Congress do now? We'll be hearing from a number of people in this hour, including former Senator Bob Graham, who was himself a key player in the NSA wiretapping saga. But first, joining me from Washington is Charles Babington. He is congressional correspondent for The Washington Post. Charles, thanks for being with us.
It's my pleasure, Tom.
So here we are, one day of hearings. What comes next? We've got the Senate Intelligence Committee. Is the Congress on track to act, or is it just going to listen?
Not clear yet, Tom. I think that's going to be determined sometime later. The Thursday hearing before the Intelligence Committee will be closed, as many of its hearings are, and that's because the subject there will be more about operational aspects of the domestic surveillance program, whereas yesterday's all-day hearing before the Judiciary Committee was open because it was about the legal rationale for the program.
What do you read coming out of yesterday's hearings? We had a lot of opposition from Democrats, but Republicans too. Lindsey Graham of South Carolina saying this could be very dangerous in terms of its application in the future. Chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee, Arlen Specter, saying that the interpretation Alberto Gonzalez was giving defied logic and plain English. So what? What's the breakdown here?
Yeah, that's right, Tom, and a couple of other Republicans on that committee, Mike DeWine of Ohio, who faces a tough re-election this year, and to some degree Sam Brownback, of Kansas, who may be trying to run for president, also raised some questions. So this does divide the Republican Party and the conservative movement much more so than many other recent contests we've had, such as the Supreme Court nominations. That said, Attorney General Gonzalez did not show, you know, one flicker of willingness to back down. We've heard nothing else from the administration that suggests any reservations that they've had. So I think it's quite unclear whether there'll be enough complaint from the Republicans, and I think it'll have to be from the Republicans, not from the Democrats, to get the administration to budge on this.
So Republican majorities in both houses of Congress, and maybe what we hear is the tension here between party solidarity and at least some of their sense of what the Congress ought to be doing to maintain its role in checks and balances. Arlen Specter yesterday almost begging the administration to take this before the courts to get a judicial sign-off on it. Is that likely? If Congress does nothing itself, might that happen?
Specter, certainly that's what he hopes will happen. You're right. He practically begged them to do that. Of course, Gonzalez said, we see no need to do that because we think we're on solid ground. Tom, I think a lot may, you know, depend on how the public reacts to this. These are all lawmakers who get elected, want to be reelected, pay attention to what their constituents say, and I think there's a big question of whether there'll be enough hue and cry from the public about this. It's a fairly arcane subject matter. It seems theoretical in many ways. Even if, you know, if somebody is listening in on your conversations, your phone conversations, you don't know it, and therefore you don't know that there's been this eavesdropping. So I think this is a big challenge for those who want who oppose the program. To get enough public momentum concern about it behind them.
Arcane, maybe, but everybody learns about checks and balances. We know the founders put that right into the DNA of the country. If Congress wanted to act, what could it do here? What are its options?
It could do a number of things. It could cut off funding for this program. It could pass a law that is more explicit, worded explicitly to forbid this type of warrantless surveillance. So there's a number of things that they could do. I should mention, we mentioned the Intelligence Committee will be having its hearing on Thursday. Its chairman, who's Pat Roberts of Kansas, is very, very strongly in favor of what the president is doing. He's already written a long letter that goes sort of, you know, line by line in sync with the legal arguments that the White House and the Justice Department have put out. So, I guess I would say that Arlen Specter and those with him who are raising a lot of questions about this are by no means the entire voice from the Republican Party on this question.
So it could go the other way once it gets to the Intelligence Committee. If we didn't have such a solid Congress, if it wasn't so solidly GOP, what might be going on here? Can you picture that scenario, Charles?
I can only speculate that it would be a very different scenario, that you would have a situation, maybe it's not analogous, but you had Bill Clinton, impeached by a House that was controlled by Republicans. You know, if the Democrats had controlled the House, then would that have happened? I seriously doubt it. So you've got, that's right, it's a tall order to ask a Republican-controlled Congress to really go right at a Republican president on an issue that he says is not only very important, but that, you know, Karl Rove and others have made clear that they want to use as a campaign issue.
And yet Congress has historically been jealous of its prerogatives, its constitutional role, and here that's being described as under challenge. Charles Babington with The Washington Post, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you, Tom.
Joining me now in the studio is Bob Graham, former three-term Democratic senator from Florida, former chairman of the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence. He's now a fellow at the Belfer Center at Harvard's Kennedy School of Government. He's been watching closely. Senator Graham, thank you very much for being
with us. Thank you very much, Tom.
What did you make of the hearings yesterday, Senator?
Tom, I saw them intermittently throughout the day. I thought it was what was expected. This administration has taken a position of no mistakes and therefore it was not to be expected that the Attorney General would indicate any doubt as to the correctness of their position. If there was a surprise to me, it was the fact that several of the Republican senators were as forceful in their pushback as they were. I don't know what form that pushback might ultimately take, but the fact that there is that ammunition in the arsenal of those who would like to change the president's position is very significant.
Do you see the constitutional role of Congress under challenge here?
I don't think it's so much the constitutional role of Congress as it is the relationship between the American people and the executive branch. The Bill of Rights were not part of the initial Constitution, but the Constitution would probably not have been approved by the states but for a commitment to immediately offer a statement of the rights of the people which were not subject to government intervention. The Fourth Amendment, which is the search and seizure provision, is one of those in the Bill of Rights. So the real contest is between the right of a citizen to be free from unreasonable searches and seizures without a warrant from a judicial body, and the executive's right to do so without such warrants and without any standard of reasonability.
But doesn't Congress sit right in the middle of that now? Arlen Specter said yesterday, Mr. Attorney General, your interpretation defies logic in plain English when it comes to the legality of what the NSA is doing. He's practically begging them to go and get it signed off on, make it legal. Patrick Leahy goes further. He says the role of Congress is to pass the laws. Your role is to follow them. Doesn't that leave Congress sitting right here on the edge of this debate?
Well, in this sense that the Congress has now become the protector of the rights of the people to be free from government action, it will be a very significant statement of the level of congressional independence and its willingness to play that role of balance of power, separation of power, as to how they proceed from here forward.
You were on the so-called Gang of Eight that was briefed very, very secretly on what the NSA was doing before it became public at all. Looking back, Attorney General Gonzalez and the President say, we talked to Congress, we told them what we were doing. Were you adequately briefed to fulfill the congressional role of sign-off on the NSA program?
Here's what I was briefed about. The National Security Agency, which is the Signals Intelligence Agency, is restricted to collecting materials from outside the United States. The FBI has the responsibility for domestic signals collection. The nature of communications is now such that a call, let's say, from Cairo to London may be routed through the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And the NSA was asking for authority to be able to intercept an international call as it was transiting through the United States.
Sounds like an all-international thing that just happens to come through the U.S. Here's Senator Charles Grassley, Republican of Iowa, on what he called the failure of Congress to do its job as a check on executive power here.
If something's wrong after the New York Times reported it, there had to be something wrong before the New York Times reported it. And all of a sudden, I see members of Congress who had that responsibility, if they really sincerely think it's wrong today, that were caught not doing their job of congressional oversight as they should have, informing the other members of Congress that there's really something wrong that the president's doing here. So I think we in Congress have to do some internal looking of whether or not we're doing our job as well as of oversight.
There, Senator Charles Grassley, yesterday at the hearings. I'm joined in the studio and glad to be so by Senator Bob Graham, three-term U.S. Senator from Florida. He was chairman of the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence, one of the so-called Gang of Eight, briefed by the White House on the NSA program. Senator Graham, you can hear Senator Grassley struggling there, looking for the right words. One can only imagine the tension. I mean, he's a loyal Republican, and yet he clearly finds this troubling.
I also would not apply the word oversight to what the Congress has done to date on these programs. Oversight infers broad involvement, the ability to share interpretations of information, the ability to use outside expertise to evaluate that. None of that is the case with the so-called Gang of Eight. They meet in secret with an administration representative. They are forbidden to talk to their colleagues about
They are, and do you remain forbidden under the terms of your former membership in that Gang of Eight? As we speak today, can you speak fully candidly about what you were briefed on or not?
I cannot speak fully candidly. I feel I can speak about things that have been previously publicly reported and therefore mm-hmm. no longer have the cloak of secrecy. Also, you're not allowed to discuss this with legal counsel or with people who might have particular expertise in the area of signals intelligence. So if it's oversight, it is a very dwarfed-sized oversight.
Not really qualifying maybe as the check or the balance.
The check infers that there is some equality of power, that if the administration wants to wiretap a particular telephone, that somebody, and under the law, it's a special federal court, has to give their approval. And that court has the authority, although rarely used, to veto an executive action. That's not the case under the program that is occurring today. It is all done within the administration without any other branch of government playing a meaningful role.
Senator Graham, the other thing that Arlen Specter and others have practically begged for is they've said, come back to us, come back to Congress, ask explicitly for whatever you need in terms of surveillance. The implication, almost explicit, we'll give it to you. Just come and stay in the game. Stay within parameters of check and balance, consultation, oversight. Why do you think the White House is not doing that, has not done it?
Well, that's an interesting mystery. Let me first comment about your your initial question. There is precedent for this. Early in the Civil War, Abraham Lincoln suspended the right of habeas corpus, that is the right to have your body produced if you're taken into custody.
Pretty fundamental.
He did it on a targeted basis. The first time he did it was around Baltimore, where there had been a series of riots broken out early in the war. In 1863, the Congress acted to expressly authorize the president to suspend habeas corpus for the duration of the conflict. So one option for this president would be to come to Congress, as President Lincoln did, and say, okay, here's what I'm doing. I want your sign-off as to its appropriateness.
And no doubt this Republican Congress would give him that.
It depends on what the nature of the request is. Now, that gets to your second point. Mm-hmm. What is it that is going on? I don't know, but I can tell you a suspicion. A couple of years ago, the Defense Department set up a program to do what's called data mining, where they collect enormous amounts of information, match it up with credit cards, bank statements, and other information, and try to see if there's some pattern.
Right.
My suspicion is that that is maybe what is going on now. Now, is out of sync with the basic concept of the FISA law, which is that you're dealing with an individual. I want to get Tom's information, so I go to a court, show cause, and they give me permission to tap your telephone.
Rather than mass processing of masses of data.
Correct.
So maybe there's apples and oranges, just not a fit here.
So, but I think that's a legitimate issue. When it came up through the Department of Defense, Congress objected sufficiently that the Defense Department collapsed that effort. Maybe now with a quasi-civilian agency, because the NSA is both a military and a civilian agency, Congress would have a different judgment. But if that's what we're doing, I think there should be a national debate, a congressional debate, and a conscious judgment. Now, again, I don't know if that's what the operational program is. That apparently is going to be discussed later this week with the intelligence committees in a closed session.
And what we'll learn about that may be very little. We're with former Senator Bob Graham, three-term Florida senator, former chairman of the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence. Senator Graham, there's much more we want to learn from you, but let me invite another voice in here. David Keene joins us from Washington. He is chairman of the American Conservative Union. He served in the presidential campaigns of Ronald Reagan and George H.W. Bush. David Keene, thank you very much for being with us.
It's a pleasure.
What do you see at stake in this surveillance program and the way it's been acted upon?
I feel a great deal at stake. Part of the problem, if you watched yesterday's hearings and indeed the debate on all of these questions, is that there's too much tendency on the side of members of both parties to play partisan rather than substantive games. The hearings are almost a version of playing gotcha. We want you to. And I think that Specter, as chairman, was taking the right tack, saying, come on now. If there is something that you legitimately cannot do under existing law, and it's unclear that there is something they couldn't do under existing law, come on up here and explain it to us. And if it's reasonable, we'll give you the authority to do it, or at least take it to the courts. It strikes me as unwise for the administration not to do that for two reasons. One, in the midst of a war with international terrorism, we really do need cooperation of the various branches of the government. We don't need a battle between the executive and the Congress. And secondly, as a conservative, even though I'm willing to acknowledge, as most people do, that in fact there are inherent powers that the president, under certain conditions and under certain circumstances, can go back and rely on, a president should be reluctant to use that argument in favor of any kind of broad-ranging action because it sets precedents that we really don't want to set.
Senator Lindsey Graham yesterday.
It seems to me that if there's a way to authorize what's needed to protect American society without falling back on those powers, on the assertion of those powers, then a wise president would do so. Now, George Bush isn't the first president, as we know, to do this. But the case, while it involves something very different, is similar to Harry Truman's seizure of the steel mills during the Korean War. He used the argument of inherent powers, saying that a steel strike threatened the supply of a strategic material to our forces in the field, that it could result in American deaths, and therefore he was going to take the steel industry.
But let me ask you, David King, there was pushback
under these circumstances. The
Supreme Court in that case said no.
Acknowledged the existence of the powers, but said that under those circumstances where Congress had acted, that they should not and could not be asserted, and he acquiesced in that decision.
And so a precedent was laid down there, at least for a while. Now we've got Senator Lindsey Graham, Republican, South Carolina, saying yesterday that he had never envisioned that he was giving the president or any other president the ability to go around FISA carte blanche, his words. In all honesty, this is Senator Graham talking to the Attorney General yesterday. He said, this statutory force resolution argument that you're making is very dangerous in terms of its applications for the future. In terms of precedent, David Keene, are we...
And he's exactly right.
Well, are we redefining the power of the executive, the presidency here?
Well, every president tries to push the envelope on these questions, particularly during wartime, and we should resist it and only allow it to be expanded where it's absolutely essential. The Attorney General, in his statement, went back and said, well, remember that Woodrow Wilson and Franklin Roosevelt monitored during wartime every single communication between anyone in the United States and any foreign country.
So?
That didn't make that a wise policy, but presidents do those things during wartime, and it seems to me that the Congress's role here, it's not simply a question of asserting institutional power and checks mm-hmm. and balances. It's a question, it seems to me, that everyone, whether they're in Congress, indeed in the executive branch, or outside, when they look at a request or an assertion of greater governmental power in areas where that power can affect the way in which we live as citizens in a free society, they need to look at that request or that assertion very, very critically. And the problem during wartime is that we oftentimes, and this is true of members of both parties in every war, suspend the critical way in which those kinds of assertions should be looked at.
And
we can't afford to do that really in any kind of war because we're fighting to preserve a certain kind of society. But it's particularly dangerous now because we're in a war which is possibly a war with no discernible endpoint.
A war the
in
president
which
calls
the
long
power
war.
Says I can do it forever.
David Keene, Senator Bob Graham, we've got a lot on the table here and a lot of listeners who want to join this conversation. Let me invite them in. Richard is calling from Hanover, Massachusetts. Hi, Richard. You're on the air.
Hi. How are you?
Well, thanks.
Very interesting discussion. I watched the hearings last night for several hours, and the last comment made by the last speaker is very interesting. I thought Joe Biden raised a very good point. When does this war end? My impression is that Congress right now is on a slippery slope to terminal impotency. The executive branch is in a power grab. The judiciary, with two new appointees, is a power grab situation for the executive branch. I was very troubled by the fact that Republicans on the committee only spoke to protect the president, and Democrats...
That's not entirely true, I must say. I must point out. I mean, we've quoted some of the criticism right here in this hour.
You have, but what I thought troubling was that the Democrats chose, instead of asking very difficult questions, chose to make speeches, which troubled me, with the exception of Biden.
What do you want them to do?
I want them to ask hard questions of Gonzales. Gonzales was allowed to use words such as "I believe" too frequently. No one pinned him into a corner or recognized that he wasn't under oath. But what we have here is a transition in which, if we have an open-ended war, then how are we going to protect the country? We all respect the fact that terrorists have to be treated in a certain fashion. But what I sense is that Congress recognizes that the horse is already out of the barn. They're trying to recollect themselves, and they are on a slippery slope, and they don't quite know how to attack the issue without giving up the notion that they might be labeled as unpatriotic.
Yeah, Richard, we hear it, and I don't want to take that to my guest, Senator Graham.
Everybody wants to be as secure as possible against terrorism or other threats to the nation. I think that in addition to the issues of legality and policy, that there also are pragmatic questions. Is this program actually accomplishing what the president and the attorney general indicate? To this point, the only case that either the president or members of his administration have pointed to as a concrete example of how this is protecting us is the case of two future hijackers who lived in San Diego during the year 2000. The fact is that those two people were living with an FBI-paid informant. They had their phone number listed in the San Diego telephone directory. The reason that they weren't detected had nothing to do with whether a warrant was required to listen to their telephone conversations. It had everything to do with institutional and individual incompetence.
And these are the two that the president cited in his State of the Union address. He said, we can't let this happen again. Yeah. If Al-Qaeda is talking to somebody, we want to know about it. You're saying you're not confident that the new program is even doing that, in which case we'd be selling this division of powers cheap.
Yeah. I'm saying that if that's the best example— that can be used to illustrate the efficacy of this program, that makes me very concerned. I'm also concerned about how this information is used. There were several questions yesterday about the issue of what happens if they collect a lot of information and 90% of it turns out to be irrelevant to Al-Qaeda. What are they going to do with it? You notice that the Attorney General didn't say we will destroy it and protect the privacy of Americans. He basically said we're going to keep it because there may be something happen later that will make this information useful. That is a very, very dangerous precedent. I also think it's important to ask the question, is this going to be used in a strictly professional, non-political manner? During the period before and particularly after 9/11, there was extreme deference paid to Saudis. We had a different standard at our customs borders for treatment of Saudis. We had a different position in terms of surveilling Saudis after 9/11. Are we using this program in a discriminatory way based on political considerations and not considerations of the security of Americans? Those are all the kind of questions which the administration refuses to answer because it throws this blanket out that all of these are operational judgments and we can't say anything about them because they would give
compromise the program
to our adversaries.
We've just got 20 seconds before the break, but our caller says he sees Congress on a slippery slope to terminal impotence. Well, you were there. What do you see?
Well, this would – I think there has been a considerable transfer of power from the Congress to the administration, particularly in the last 5 years.
Here's Arlen Specter in closing yesterday saying the administration should tell the FISA courts everything because, in his words, the equilibrium of American government is in the balance.
I hope you will give weighty thought to taking this issue to the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court. Lock, stock, and barrel. Let them see the whole thing and let them pass judgment. Because if they disagree with you, it's the equilibrium of our constitutional system which is involved. And the Al-Qaeda threat is very weighty, but so is the equilibrium of our constitutional system.
I agree, Senator.
The equilibrium of our constitutional system. 1-800-423-TALK. Anna's calling from Moline, Illinois. Hi, Anna, you're on the air.
Thank you for having me.
Sure.
Yes, I'd like to have a voice for, I believe, all of the American people. I don't know all the jargon, all the lingo of politics, but what I do understand is that I don't believe that it is just between the president and the people, as former Senator Graham spoke about. I believe that we've hired Congress, voted Congress in, to protect our rights. That is their job. And as in any job, we do not want to babysit Congress. So I believe it is Congress's job to be there to protect them. And are they on a slippery slope? Definitely. I think they've fallen in. This should have taken place long ago, that they should have caught the equilibrium that is completely out of balance here now. And it's gone way to one side. And the American people, they understand this, and they're wondering, why is Congress there? If we have to interact with the president ourselves, as Senator Graham spoke about, and I totally understand the premise of that statement, but on the other hand, Congress is there for a reason. We've hired them. We've voted them in for a reason.
And Anna, we hear it. We hear it very clearly, and we thank you for the call, Senator Graham. There's a challenge. Anna says, wait a minute. Don't throw this back on us. Don't make us come out in the streets. We hired Congress to stick up for its role on Capitol Hill.
Well, Anna, you make a good point. I would also say, however, I think that one of the major maladies that we have in our democracy today is the limited amount of direct citizen participation. And this could be an issue around which citizens could express their strong opinions in terms of protecting their civil rights. I was using that example. There are some issues. Let's take one like the line item veto, which is sort of an inside baseball question between the executive and the legislative branch. It doesn't particularly affect citizens greatly. This is an issue where the citizens are the party at risk. You don't want to be under apprehension that your telephone conversations are being listened to, and whatever the subject of that conversation is being stored away somewhere so that if it becomes useful to the government at a later time, and when you say the government, you don't know who that is. Is that the IRS? Is it the FBI?
But, Senator Graham, do you have to have pitchfork parades for Congress to stand up and fill that role? I'm just saying, wait a minute, we already voted you in there to do that.
I think Congress should stand up to this, and they have, as the various senators who you have put on the air today have indicated, a number of options as to how to do this. I personally believe that the federal, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act is the controlling law in the country, and the president should abide by it in the same way that President Truman abided by a judicial ruling when the courts overturned his efforts to take control of the steel mill.
As David Keene was saying, but Anna, you can hear in return there advice from a sage senator saying without some of that public pressure, you may not see the stand-up you're looking for.
If I could comment on that.
Yes, David Keene.
I think your caller makes a very good point. You know, the checks and balances and the way the Constitution is written doesn't assume that any of these are bad actors. It sets up institutional competition as a way of controlling overreaching by any arm of government. And I think what you heard there in those hearings were some members of the Senate saying we are not doing our job, just as your caller suggests. Senator Grassley asked the question, how come we're reacting now? How come we haven't been looking into these things all along? Are we doing our job? And the question is, the answer to that question is not very well.
Ron's calling from Alexandria Bay, New York. Hi, Ron. You're on the air.
Yes, hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. What do you think, Ron?
Well, I think it's part of an overall blatant power grab. But my question is, Arlene Specter's rush to get this into the courts, I have to wonder if it isn't a matter of passing the buck, you know, of standing up and blustering, looking good for constituents, and then not wanting to handle it, just get it off to a court that his party has recently stacked.
Right. And well, I don't know about that, but...
Well, my concern is that rushing it to the court is essentially passing the buck and not wanting to do the hard work that this whole matter is going to involve.
Yeah, that's a very interesting observation. Let me put it to
comment on that.
David Keene, please.
Yes, going back to what was just said, the difference in this debate and perhaps what happened during the Lincoln administration, as if you notice throughout Mr. Gonzalez's testimony, was a repeated refusal to acknowledge that there was even any question about the legality of the actions that the administration had taken.
Absolutely.
And I think that, so there was, in the Lincoln case, he said, I don't know. You know, maybe I went too far. Let's take a look at this. What Gonzalez is saying is there ain't any need to look at it because we know what we did is legal. And I think what the Senator Specter was saying is let's take this to the court. Let's get another opinion. Let's try to avoid the kind of institutional warfare that we're both edging toward and try to work together.
But are they really edging toward it?
You don't go to war with another institution until you've got to the point where you have no other alternative. And I think what Specter is saying is let's stop short of that. Let's fix this. Do what Lincoln did or do what somebody else did. Let's not break this whole system down in the midst of a war with an enemy as dangerous as al-Qaeda.
But it takes two to tangle. Bob Graham, is this Congress really marching toward that kind of confrontation over the institutional issues that David Keene and Lou Fisher raise? Are they, as our caller Ron asked, is Arlen Specter trying to pass the buck by giving it to Congress? Should the courts?
I would say if it's a march, it's a slow march. Thus far, there's been an unwillingness of Congress to engage. One thing that Congress might do would be to do what Lincoln did, and that is, or what the Congress did for Lincoln, that is have someone introduce legislation which would specifically authorize what the administration is doing and have that become the focus of the debate. I hope and think.
Whether the administration asks for it or not, just go ahead and do it and pass it through a Republican Congress or try.
Well, I doubt that a Republican Congress would pass that. Then that would frame the issue. the Congress having refused to authorize what the president is doing. Now, what is the Congress going to do affirmatively?
That instead of ducking it, would be putting it right out on the table, putting it up, and then you're saying probably not passing it because it would be too vague without more detail. But then what does that lead to?
Well, then I think what that leads to is the Congress demanding that the administration ask for those changes, for instance, in the FISA law, which the administration feels are necessary in order to have an effective program of interception of messages from U.S. persons to terrorists, and see if the Congress will adopt those.
But that goes straight to the confrontation. You know this Congress. Do you see a chance in Hades of this Congress doing that?
I think there is if the administration were to say, these are the problems that we have, and I think many of them would be in this area where the current law anticipates a case-by-case, person-by-person mm-hmm. warrant, and what they actually want is permission to do
mass processing, yeah.
Data mining.
Mm-hmm.
Let the administration come forward, as the Defense Department almost did, and ask for authority to do this. And if the Congress refuses to grant it, then I believe that is a statement that the president does not have the authority to continue that practice, if, in fact, that is the practice that they are.
David Keene, the White House is part of the message we've been getting from the White House is, look, we've got a tough situation here, and you need to trust us. The president has said almost, I think, explicitly, trust us. We're doing the right thing. It's being handled by professionals. We're doing this the right way. The country's in a tight spot. We've got national security issues. Trust us. What do you say to that, Mr. Keene?
Well, on the one hand, I don't doubt that that's what they believe and that's what they'd like us to do. Neither the president nor the attorney general nor the rest of them are sitting around plotting how to short-circuit our rights. What they are doing is pursuing the mission of fighting the terrorists, and they want to use all the possible tools they can find, just as the police want to when they're fighting crime. And they don't want to, and in pursuing that mission, they forget about other values. That's a human tendency as well as an institutional tendency. And the job of the Congress is to say, wait a minute, there are other values that we also have to worry about. We want you to accomplish your goal, but we don't want you to trample on everything else in the process. This is not a contest, or shouldn't, and I think that that putting it in institutional terms is an excellent way to try and focus it. This isn't a group of bad guys trying to do one thing and good guys trying to do the other. This is a situation in which different people within the government have different missions, and their missions should be seen as different. And the job of all of this working together and the institutional rivalry and everything is to mediate and make those missions work together. And I don't doubt for a minute the sincerity of what the president's saying, but the idea of us ever simply saying to anyone in a position of power, whether it's in a fight against terror or anything else, don't worry, it's okay, do what you want, we know you're trying to do the right thing, so we'll trust you. The fact is that very few bad things have been done in the name of doing bad things. Most of the bad things that have happened throughout history have been accomplished by people who have assured their followers and their citizens that they were doing it for them.
But the U.S. Constitution was set up exactly
precisely when they're pursuing a valid mission that you have to be most careful.
Bob Graham, we've just got 20 seconds left here. You've been there and were there for a long time. Do you think Congress is going to stand up here or not?
I hope so. This will be an opportunity for Congress not only to reassert its institutional role, but also to begin to dampen down the permeating partisanship, which has been so much a part of recent congressional activities. This is a time for members of Congress to act as Americans, not as partisans.
And rally around their constitutional role. Senator Bob Graham, three-term Florida senator, thank you very much for being with us today. Terrific to have you. David Keene, chairman of the American Conservative Union. Thanks to both of you. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.